Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to the show. My name is Dan Hafner. Welcome back to all of you. I'm super excited for another special guest today on the show. Terry Zimniak. Is that how you
say it? Zimniak.
Zimniak. I totally forgot.
Depends how Polish you are. But yeah, Zimniak, if you're my grandma.
Zimniak. Ah, interesting. Okay. Forgot to clarify that with you before we started. My fault. My apologies, everyone. But yeah, so we got Terry on today. He's talking about cybersecurity stuff. It's going to be really, really fun. I have a soft spot for cybersecurity. I kind of went down the rabbit hole, got my you know, an advanced degree in it. Didn't really go that route with my career, now being in software and app development and stuff like that. But that's why I kind of wanted to have Terry on to talk about this kind of stuff, because, you know, we were just talking before we hit record here. There's very interesting dynamics when it comes to you know, people tend to forget about security or online security a lot. I think, especially kind of us being in the entrepreneurial, the startup phase, it's software development. There's this age old question of like, do you just build stuff fast and forget about security, or do you bake in security? And we can go back and forth about that kind of stuff. So we're going to talk a lot about that. So if you guys have an interest in cybersecurity, you know, any of that around that conversation, this will be one for you to stick around with and check out. So, but before we bring Terry in again, just want to remind you real quick, as always, really appreciate any shares, likes, subscribes, reviews of the show, wherever you're listening or watching, whether it's Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Facebook, whatever, wherever, whenever we get together. So we really appreciate that. So please take a second and do that. And we would really, really appreciate that for you. All right. So Terry, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
I am great, Dan.
Yeah, Terry is, Terry has like 25, 30 years experience in this field. So he's not just some schmuck I brought on here. We met through Podmatch, as I meet most of my people. He really knows what he's talking about. So Terry, you know, I'm going to ask you right out of the gate. Why should I, as a small business owner, why should I, as an entrepreneur, why should I care about cybersecurity? Like, why is that important to my business?
Cybersecurity, Dan, is a business risk, just like any other risk that a business owner needs to be aware of. And whether you're an entrepreneur, small business, or big organization, you have these nebulous external sorts of things that have to be dealt with that can never be corrected 100%, but must be addressed, reviewed, and properly managed. Cyber is just something that now has to be in the bucket, along with your competitive risk and your financial risk and your HR risk and all of the things that you deal with as a business leader. In the startup and the entrepreneurial space, it's your risk management is going to be different than in a big organization. If you're at a big Bank of America, you're dealing with risk much differently than if you're a small organization making a dog walking application. So it has to be addressed because it's a business requirement. The other thing I'm seeing is, aside from just the how to organize your business and how to manage your business, more and more, the big, whoever you're selling to has certain expectations. So if you have an app or a service or whatever your business line may be, if you're trying to sell to banks, hospitals, government, military, even to individuals, there's expectations from these prospects and clients that you're hitting a certain level of security. Now the expectations are going to change whether you're selling to perhaps a high school kid versus a grandma versus a financial advisor, different expectations, but the expectations are out there. So you need to be kind of secure enough to sell. And we can certainly dive into exactly what that means, but you need to find the right balance line. Are you shooting for Fort Knox, which I'll tell you now is the wrong target for you? You don't need to be bulletproof as a startup or a small company. But on the other hand, you also can't be irresponsible. So figure out where the right level of security is and then drive towards that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, so, you know, in this world, we tend to find a lot of SaaS products that are already created for us that, you know, allow us to move fast. You think of things like Stripe, right? The biggest payment processor out there. You think of things like Square or, you know, big website builders like a GoDaddy or Wix or something like that. You know, do those types of platforms serve, is it still my responsibility if I'm starting a business, if I'm running my business on these platforms, is it my responsibility to know that they are secure and that they will take care of any customer data that I capture? Or is that, or is the onus on them to do that?
If you're using someone as a external services to do something for your business, yes, you must make sure they're secure.
Okay.
Now that's going to, again, that's going to mean different things, and there's a different level of obligations depending on what you're doing. But I'll give you the example of if you're in the healthcare space, again, you're selling to a hospital, to an independent doctor, to insurance, to whoever it may be, that's the HIPAA space. So you've probably all heard of HIPAA. That's when you walk into the doctor's office, you got to sign those, all that stupid paperwork. That's part of HIPAA, but HIPAA has a whole lot of cybersecurity implications. If you're selling to, again, an independent chiropractor, let's say, and you're selling a service, the chiropractor most likely is governed by HIPAA, and he's going to make you sign a document saying, hey, Dan, you're doing collections for me. So you're governed by HIPAA because I'm governed by HIPAA. So that's a business associate. Now Dan's governed by HIPAA. HIPAA requires you, Dan, to make sure the people working for you are properly protecting the data. So typically there's a chain of contracts that'll go run down the line. So yeah, you're responsible to make sure your third parties are properly secure. The great news is if you're dealing with Stripe, if you have something in AWS, you know, if you're using the big players, your CRM, whatever, your Salesforce, whatever it may be, it's pretty quick evaluation to verify they're hitting the right level of security. So it's a relatively simple assessment at that point. Now, if you're dealing with Terry's financial banking application, you may be a little more leery and have to dive a little deeper into that. But yeah, that expectation of security, that transfer of obligation is typically going to come down contractually from your client to you, to your service provider. So there is an expectation that service provider is not providing risk upstream to your client.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you bring up HIPAA because I've had some people approach me over the years and talk about, you know, building an application that does this or that or whatever, but it has to be HIPAA compliant. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, oh, there's probably a lot of money in that. That would be really, really cool. And then the further I looked into it, the more I realized I will not touch anything HIPAA related with a 39.5-foot pole. I mean, it's so the fines, the potential downside for any kind of breach or any kind of thing that happens through any of that as a small business owner scared the living shit out of me. And I was like, nope, not doing that whatsoever. Like, if you want to do that, great, more power to you. Not my cup of tea. Not going to take that on, you know? But then
that's true. But Dan, there's not many areas you can play in that don't have those expectations anymore. So again, healthcare, finance, government, military, even dealing with non-for-profits, education, they all have expectations like that these days. And a lot of them are regulatory-based. If you do credit cards, PCI, that's more contractual-based, but still, there's expectations from your clients and prospects. And you're obligated either contractually or regulatorily, that's a word, there's expectations you're going to protect the data. You can't carve that out these days. State regulation, you know, California is the big guy, but California has expectations. If you're collecting email addresses regarding, you know, whatever it may be for your end users, you have expectations to protect the data. You just can't avoid it these days. But wow. I'll go back to my intro statement is you have to understand it. So you got to take a moment, understand what I call what's the right level of security for you. You got to think through what those expectations are and help you write the right line in the sand and then work towards that line. So understand the expectations, draw that line, draw the goal for you, and then work towards the goal.
Yeah. Okay. So that's interesting because, you know, one thing I think about too, and I've just learned to, I guess, train my brain to think, you know, a little differently about these types of things is, you know, it's from a business perspective, from a, almost from like a differentiation, you know, perspective, like, you know, okay, if I'm going to go through and do and kind of revamp some things, go through some things, how can I actually position myself and use cybersecurity, you know, as that differentiator or driver for my brand, for my business, you know, or you know, for any of the listeners, like how does that long term, you know, make me different in the market if I really go down this path?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite clients, I've been working with them for several years now, but when I started with them, I spoke to the CEO and I said, you know, and this is a common conversation I have with all my clients and prospects. Why do you want to be secure? Because security is not free. It's going to take some money. You're going to have to adjust your processes. There's going to be adjustments and modifications to hit whatever level of security. Why do you want to be secure? And she said, well, Terry, one, it's the right thing to do. So of course you want to protect the day. In this case, as a healthcare organization, you want to protect it. Great. Number two, it's going to be a sales differentiator for us. So she was thinking strategically right off the bat. Say, hey, Terry, when you help me build this program, let's meet the minimums, but let's also figure out how to allow us to differentiate in the marketplace. And that was exactly what she said when I started with her several years ago. So that being said, it can be a sales leader, and you can start the conversations as a vendor if you're selling your product and your service or whatnot. Why wait for them to ask you about security? You can start the conversation. And again, the conversation is not necessarily that we're bulletproof, because most likely you're not bulletproof, and you're not, most startups and small companies are not in exceptionally great security space. However, if you have a cybersecurity story, that will resonate. So your story may be, hey, we're 18 months old, we're piloting at 3 places and 1 client, you know, that set the table. Here's where we're at from a security perspective. You know, we've met HIPAA regulations. Next year, we're working on SOC 2. 2 years down the road, we're considering high trust, whatever it may be. Use industry standard language. We're NIST aligned. You know, we do penetration tests. So just like your founder and your leaders have to have stories to sell the business and discuss the business, position the business, add a cybersecurity story to your toolbox of stories. Be able to talk about it and discuss it as a differentiator and lead with the conversation.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, and that brings up kind of back to what you said something earlier about this, like, you know, this difference between, you know, Fort Knox and, you know, what's the
being irresponsible.
Yeah. So like, you know, where do you draw that line? Where do you say that, you know, what is, I think as you've termed it in one of your, you know, one of your things is, what's secure enough? Like, when can I be like, you know, I'm secure enough. I got enough of, you know what I mean? Like, what does that look like?
It depends, because it's a risk management conversation. Secure enough for Bank of America, or earlier in my career, I was VP of cybersecurity, some really big healthcare systems across the US. Their level of secure enough is up here. Well, actually, the banks are up here, healthcare is down here, but you got to figure out what it is. I'll tell you a shortcut answer for the small businesses and startups. You need to be secure enough to sell. You need to figure out what your prospects and clients are expecting. You need to understand the minimum regulatory requirements. You need to understand what you need to buy your cyber insurance, because typically you can't sign a contract unless you have cyber insurance. Cyber insurance has certain expectations. So again, you got to look at those external entities, and they will help you to find what secure enough is. And again, for a small gal getting started, you got to be secure enough to sell, and then build upon that. Maybe next year, we're going to go a little better. Next year, again, part of your security story. We're here. We have plans. We're going to go forward.
Okay. So starting with the baseline, secure enough to sell, to operate, to make sure that nothing really happens, you know, that kind of stuff. That's interesting. So I wonder if you could talk about this. So this is actually a personal story that maybe we could relate to and talk about this. So when I had first started my business back in 2020, I got my first few app clients. We were building, we were publishing, we were good to go. I think it was 3 or 4 months into it. One day we go to log in, everything's like just white screen, nothing's loading. Just can't figure out why. Just like, then I start getting these people, hey, Dan, do you know why our thing's not working? What's going on here? Long story short, there was a complete and utter wipeout via a fire of an entire Amazon data storage facility over in Europe somewhere where the storage had happened. Everything was unrecoverable. Unrecoverable, right? I tell that story. I did end up recovering. I got everything fixed and I learned a lesson. I actually switched providers of something that I could do backups with and like manual backups. And now I have it. I can offload things. I can do that kind of stuff. That was an early lesson in my business where I learned like, oh, you actually do need to give a crap about this kind of stuff. So like, you know, is there any, you know, recommendations or best practices that people can have as far as backups go or physical security or, you know, data, you know, anything like that, that you can speak on at all?
Well, I'd start the response with this, Dan, is there's kind of a new buzzword in the cyber business space, and it's called business resiliency. So, and that really goes along, and that talks about how do we as a business survive if there were an incident, whether, you know, a fire, ransomware, virus, whether Dan goes crazy and he logs in his admin and just tanks everything just maliciously. Business resiliency is how does your business function in the worst case scenario? The idea isn't to avoid the worst case scenario because fires are going to happen. You know, malicious employees are going to happen. You drive down the risk the best you can, but realizing something catastrophic may happen, how do you survive as a business? And that really goes along the lines of business continuity planning, business impact analysis. So there's kind of a businessy approach to all that. So I say as a business leader, kind of think through that. What do you need to survive? And, you know, the obvious things, actually, maybe non-obvious, payroll. How do you make payroll? You know, if your payroll provider goes offline, and that's starting to happen occasionally, some of these big service organizations are going offline. Yeah, right now we're April 2024. 2 weeks ago, Change Healthcare went offline. I'm not sure if you've read those stories, Dan. Change Healthcare processes about a third of the pharmacy payments within the healthcare ecosystem here in the U.S. And they're talking billions of dollars are being lost. $1 billion a day is being lost because they can't process all these pharmaceutical requests. They can't validate the insurance. It's a complete train wreck. They're bringing it back online now, but for about 2 weeks, basically financial payments were not happening in the pharmacy space for a large subset of our healthcare organization across the U.S. Big deal.
Wow.
You can't, as a business owner, avoid that problem. You can't make sure that, in this case, Change Health doesn't get, they got hit by ransomware is what it was. But you can't make sure your service provider is bulletproof. But as a business owner, you can say, you know, this is a really, really important process for us. What do we do if these guys go down? Even just a tabletop conversation of what's the five most critical service providers and what would you do if, whatever reason, boom, they are off the face of the earth tomorrow? There's some critical conversations. Again, how does your business survive in that worst case scenario?
Yeah, I mean, it even reminds me, I had not heard about those. Actually, now that you say that, I feel like I might have heard something. But you know, that what immediately comes to mind are those stories when, you know, Meta, when Facebook and Instagram and all this stuff goes down and everyone knows about it all like in 5 seconds. Right. And it's a big story. I think there was an outage, several months ago, there was a big one or something. There's a couple last year, because that's interesting. Cause there's, you know, they're talking about this TikTok ban now as we're recording this. And there's many, many people that are upset about it because their business was built on that. They sell stuff on there. They get traffic on there. They do things right. And a lot of those people didn't think through like, what do I do if TikTok doesn't exist? If that's where 100% of my revenue comes from, if that poof goes away, which could actually happen, right? Yeah. Like, boom, what happens? You know what I mean? And Facebook's the same way. So that's a really, really interesting. I love that you coined that as resiliency. Or maybe you didn't coin it, but you know, you refer to it that way because that really sparks a lot of ideas. So do you recommend, you know, having actual documents that kind of, you know, back these things up, like business continuity things, resiliency things, you know, those types of like, is there any kind of resources that you know of that people, or do you recommend people having those?
You need it for probably a couple reasons. And the number of reasons and how it applies to you would then lead to how good does your documentation have to be. So if you have regulatory expectations, again, you know, HIPAA requires you to do some of this stuff. You have to have reasonably good documentation. So if your objective is hit regulations, be good enough to cover the regulations. However, just as a business owner, this is a healthy exercise to go through maybe every year, every 2 years. So write it down well enough to capture your thoughts and think through. Maybe you have some assignments and some takeaways, and you've got a calendar to make sure every 24 months we have this conversation again. So I'm not a fan of, unless you're at a big company, you don't document for document's sake. Again, just like secure enough, you need to document well enough to meet your expectations. Because as a small, medium-sized business, as a startup, you don't have the extra resources to make 18-page pretty documents. You need to be good enough to cover the intent and get the value out of the exercise. But I do want to take a step back, Dan. We were talking about how as a business owner, and I rely on Stripe or TikTok or whatever it may be, and if they go offline, I want to turn the table real quick. And as a small business owner, you're worried about people downstream, but I'd remind you to look upstream. Your prospects and your clients consider you that same risk. They are probably asking the same questions. Hey, I'm a business and I pay Dan to do X. What if Dan disappears? What if Dan goes rogue? What if Dan gets a virus? So while you're looking downstream and protecting yourself from those guys, look upstream and realizing you are their risk. And again, part of your cybersecurity story, help assuage the concerns of your prospects and clients by having that conversation. Because, you know, if they get too worried about you, maybe they're going to look someplace else.
That makes perfect sense. And that's actually, it's funny you say the cybersecurity story, because I started to use that initial thing that happened with me as I move forward over the next couple of years. As I've had, you know, people are like, hey, what happens like if this goes away? And I'm like, hey, not to worry. You get this little button over here, download it, back it up. You got it all stored over here on a flash drive you want. And if everything goes poof tomorrow, you're good to go. So I actually had a little bit of a cybersecurity story now that I think about it. So that's awesome. Very, very interesting. Okay. One thing I want to talk about too, is I try to talk about this with a lot of my guests, and this is perfect, is this conversation, this topic of AI, obviously. What can you tell us? I know this is very broad, and maybe we can, you know, dive down specific examples, but, you know, is AI making things less secure? Is it making things more secure? I'm sure there's probably ways people are using AI to buffer security and bolster things, but then there's probably also the nefarious side of those things as well too. So I'm just curious, like, just what are your general thoughts on all of this advent of all this stuff?
That is a very broad question. It's good and bad. It's a tool like any other tool. You can find benefits out of it, and there's a lot of negative aspects too from a cybersecurity perspective. What I would tell you is, if you're thinking about that from a business perspective, kind of break it into some silos. So you've got the AI for office workers, your ChatGPT and your Copilot, all that stuff, and good and bad, but there's areas of concern you have to talk about in that space, and that would be data governance. You know, can we use ChatGPT? How should we be using ChatGPT? Do we have the rules and policy in place? So, you know, office users' productivity is kind of one area of conversations you have to have in the AI space. AI tools for cybersecurity, is a whole lot of them. Every cybersecurity company now has AI blasted everywhere, and every piece of marketing and every conversation to talk AI. Most of that technology is already built in. So obviously Google uses it for its email filtering. Your antivirus, anti-malware, your computer is going to use it. Your firewall uses it. Your SIM uses it. So all the technologies that have AI built, that kind of just happens in the background. And that's great. Another thing to think about is your threat actors. So who are the people you're worried about? The bad guys are making better phishing campaigns because they have AI. You know, now they can say, they can tie together, hey, Dan, they know Dan, they know his email. Maybe they know his address. So they go and look online and say, hey, Dan, maybe your tax record. Hey, Dan, I know you live at address XYZ. Your tax bill for last month, you mispaid. Please do XYZ. You can just automate all that stuff these days. They have all sorts of great things. Your phishing campaigns get better because, well, just a couple of days ago, one of my clients said, hey, You know, they figured out who the people players are in the company. They know who the boss is. They know the phone numbers. So they're sending texts to the players pretending to be the boss, saying, "Hey, I need you to do X, Y, Z." So just better and better social engineering attacks are going to happen because of AI. They actually had a case very recently. This is sorry, I'll end with this one, Dan. They had a case out in somewhere in Asia, maybe China, just a few weeks ago, was announced that a gentleman of finance department, a big company out in Asia, I think China, got an email that said, "Hey, I need you to make this transfer, a financial transfer." And he said, "Boy, that looks unusual. I'm not going to do it." But it was followed up with an invite for a Zoom call, a video call that included the CEO, the CFO, and I think one other person. The four of these people, including the victim in this case, got on a video chat, and they had a chat, and they convinced the guy to do the transfer. The whole thing was artificial intelligence. So the CEO was fake. The CFO was fake. They knew who the people were. They built video and the language models to look and sound like these executives, and the financial guy believed it, and he sent $25 million off to nowhere. These attacks are going to be more and more convincing. Text, image, video, it's all flawless these days.
Wow. Well, that was one thing I was going to say was I saw a Facebook ad the other day of these AI chatbots that can do, you know, phone calls. You can do the outbound phone call thing now with all these people with, you know, it's just very, very human-like sounding voices, all that kind of stuff. And then thinking about it in terms of cybersecurity, you know, mm-hmm. just like you said, phishing attacks. Hey, you know, we just got an alert that you did this and that and whatever. And we need you to reset your password and do this and send this over here. But it sounds real. It sounds authentic. It can be, you know what I mean? But that Zoom thing, that's freaking it. That's wild.
Well, I read the FTC, which, by the way, has some fantastic content for small and mid-sized companies, but the FTC blasts out a lot of information on fraud in the cyberspace. They said the number one, the most valuable, most impactful attacks are cases where the person's on the phone. So instead of sending Dan an email saying, "Hey, this is Microsoft, you have a virus," it's a phone call. "Hey, Dan, this is Terry at Microsoft, you got a virus on your computer." Now you can use AI to it's more impactful, meaning the losses are bigger for Dan in this case. The average loss is bigger if you're talking to a fraudster on the phone as opposed to dealing with a fraudster via email. The bad guys know that. So the bad guys are now more and more having fake phone calls because as an end user, as a victim, you're more likely to interact with this person and they can just ratchet up the value of the fraud.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And I'll tell you one more thing. Maybe what you're thinking, your listeners may be thinking is, "Boy, this sounds like the end of the world. What are we going to do about it?" And that's a great question. We don't have a perfect answer. But I'll tell you, the best fake in the whole world that's 100% convincing, that looks, that's indistinguishable from real life, if you have the right processes in place, you can block the fraud. So if I'm really, really convincing and I convince Dan that I'm the CFO and I say, "Dan, you got to make this payment now." And Dan can't tell difference because it's 100%, it's indistinguishable from the real CFO. If the process is in place, if you have a financial process that says Dan will not change the bank routing information without authenticating it two different means, one via voice and one via something else. Sound processes are a non-technological solution, or at least a risk mitigator, to these real big problems that are popping up. Write your processes, test your processes, enforce your processes is a good way to deal with all the social engineering nonsense that's booming now.
Yeah. I mean, I even think about that in terms of like movies, you know, like there's, they talk about like all these movies with the nuclear launch codes or whatever. And there's, you know, it's like, the president has one and then the sec def has one and then the joint chairman of the joint chiefs or something. So unless they're all input, something won't go off or something, you know, won't happen like that. And that makes perfect sense of, you know, just kind of thinking through and it does kind of stink that you have to think through these types of things. But like you said, it's the world we live in. It's the way of the future. It's just different things you have to think about. What are some other non-technical things that we might, you know, consider on top of that?
Well, when you talk about security controls, which are protections, your controls, they typically break into buckets of people, process, and technology. So the technology is kind of the shiny firewalls and the bits of software, all the cool stuff that the vendors like to sell you. Mm-hmm. Technology is good and certainly needed, but it's not a panacea. It's not going to fix everything. On the people side, you've got training, you've got education, you've got fish testing, culture, empowerment. And maybe that's a key, something to talk about for the small, mid-sized organization, even the entrepreneur. You're never going to have enough technology and governance and structure to make sure developer Dan is always doing the right thing, or financial person Dan's always doing the right thing, or HR Dan's doing the right thing. So whatever the roles are, you're never going to have enough oversight to make sure that they always do the job right. And that shouldn't be your intent. Your intent, especially as a smaller company, is to empower Dan to do his job. So what that means is you want to build a culture where Dan knows enough to be wary of things. Dan knows the guidelines. Hey, you can stay within this space, Dan, but if you go outside, if something's outside the norm, you have to stop. Educate, build a culture. And at the end of the day, you want Dan, as my sample employee, Dan to be able to be confident to raise his hand. Hey, something's odds going on. Or, hey, something changed. We're just about to sign a new contract. We better talk to the cybersecurity folks. So the empowerment and the culture is a big part of the people part of cybersecurity. And certainly don't forget that, because frankly, it's not expensive and it's a necessary counter control to everything else you're doing. Okay. And then people, process, technology. Process is the last part. And again, that's things like we will not change payroll bankrotting information without two forms of validation. We will not sign contracts until the cybersecurity team signs off on it. You know, we will do whatever, but those processes, and again, it doesn't cost much from a capital expense point of view, but this is where it can slow things down. We talked about that a little bit. Cybersecurity has costs, and it can slow things down because you have to make sure everything's valid. So again, set the guidelines, and if you're outside the guidelines, refer to your processes, and that's how those three pillars all fit together.
Yeah, they do fit together really nicely when you think about it in terms like that. That's really, really helpful. So, okay, so the last question, you know, we've covered a lot here today. We've kind of gone through a lot of different things. I guess if we could just wrap it up in a nice little bow. You know, where do I start? Like, where if I've done nothing, you know, assuming I've done nothing with security or not even given it a second thought, or maybe I used to and I kind of let it go and I'm like, oh crap, I really need to get my stuff together. You know, what I know, and I know this is again vague, but like from a small business perspective, from an entrepreneurial perspective, you know, where can I start? What type of things could I do?
I would suggest the way forward on that, Dan, is again, kind of break it in a bucket. So you got a lot to deal with. Most smaller organizations, especially perhaps the startups and entrepreneurs, they've got buckets of, they have to protect their business, and don't forget about your business. Make sure your email is secure and your bank account is secure. So you got your business, you got your technology stack, which is kind of your email, maybe your cloud service provider, you got your stuff up in Azure, AWS. And then you may also, if you're a development group, you may have custom code that you're working on. So most businesses are going to have two, if not three, of those large pillars. For each of those, leverage frameworks and best guidance that's already out there. If you want to consider how to secure your bank or your Twitter account, don't forget about social media, go ask Twitter or X, go ask your bank, go ask Google, hey, Google, I'm using Gmail Enterprise. What's the best way to secure that? There's guidance out there and it's not overly burdensome, but Google knows what are the 10 things you must do to really protect Gmail and Google Workspace and whatnot. So leverage the best practice for your office and your business productivity. Similarly, when we talk about kind of your technology stack, your Windows and your network and your firewall, there's guidance out there. NIST is a big one. It may be too big for some players. NIST has guidance out there. The Center for Internet Security has guidance out there. Even in Azure and AWS, there's guidance that you can follow. You say, hey, I want to be, I don't know, pretend like I'm SOC 2 compliant. and give me a report, Azure, how good I'm doing within the Azure space. They'll run reports for you. And then lastly, on the development, similarly, go find your best practice guidance and follow it. There's guidance out there. So I would kind of summarize it, Dan, that when you do a cybersecurity review and you're getting started, your goal should not be, we've met Terry's expectations of security or we've met Dan's expectations. Go find the right people. Go find the frameworks, the vendors, the government recommendations. Go back to ask your clients and your prospects, what are your expectations? Go talk to your cyber insurance and what are your expectations? So kind of figure out the expectations and frameworks and then start from there. With our goal is to hit these framework structures and methodically work through it.
Yeah, no, that's gold. That's really good advice. I think, you know, like you said, and it kind of goes along with anything really, just kind of break it into buckets, see what's out there, go forward, do what you got to do. Don't, you know, live up to anyone else's expectations or anything. So,
and that becomes your story, that feeds into your story, and that feeds into your, maybe you've got an 18 or 24 month cybersecurity strategy document. You know, this quarter we're working on AWS security. Next quarter we're working on Google security. Next, whatever it may be, you've got a plan and you're executing to a plan.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, Terry. Well, that is about all the time I think we got. Do you have anywhere where we can go learn more, or anything you want to promote, or anything while you got the chance here?
Yeah, thank you. So I've been in the cybersecurity consulting space for about 20 years now. So I actually work with small businesses and startups and kind of help with the business part of cybersecurity, exactly what we're talking about. What's the right level of security for us? So that's the space that I play in. If you're interested in hearing more, I work for TechCXO, so techcxo.com. I'm one of their partners, and we're just a collection of seasoned fractional executives, part-time executives that play in this space. So I'm one of the cybersecurity guys in there. So TechCXO, and look for Terry Zimniak.
All right. TechCXO. We'll put that in the show notes for you guys as well, too. That's TECH. All right, everyone. Thank you so much, Terry. This was really helpful. It was kind of cool to go back down the cybersecurity lane for myself. Like I said, I kind of had a pass in it and kind of been out of that world for a while, but it was kind of cool to go back down it. So, and I'm sure we could sit here and talk about lots and lots more stuff, but unfortunately we can't do like a 5-hour podcast or anything. You know what I mean? But no, this was really helpful. I hope this, you know, I think we provided some interesting information for some people out there. Yeah, this was really good, really fun, and we really appreciate you coming on.
It's been a pleasure, Dan. Thank you.
All right, everyone. That's a wrap for this show. As always, please like, share, subscribe, review, rate, anything that you can do to help grow the podcast, help it, you know, reach more people, higher ratings, higher rankings on whatever place you are listening or watching. So that is it for this episode, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Be sure to check out the link in the show notes, and we'll see you next time. See ya.